Hi, I'm Adam Sanford. I'm an academic life coach and professor in Los Angeles.
And I'm Dinur Bloom. I'm a college professor in Los Angeles.
And this is Learning Made Easier, a podcast where we discuss how we learn and how we teach and how they overlap.
Welcome back to Learning Made Easier. You're listening to the COVID-19 special episodes.
This podcast is about effective learning and effective teaching. And now we all have to do this with a new wrinkle provided by COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, which is sweeping the world in a pandemic, the likes of which we have not seen since AIDS, polio, and the 1918 Spanish flu.
As a result of COVID-19, many universities, colleges, and K-12 schools have either closed down or moved to distance learning, which, for most teachers, means going online. In this special COVID-19 series, we will unpack some of the major issues teachers and students are facing, as well as ways to deal with these issues.
Now, please note, we are not going to pull punches here. We're going to be direct and blunt about what can be done and what can't be done. We're not going to be able to tell you how to keep things just the way they used to be. That's not going to be possible. So with that in mind, let's move forward.
This is our 9th episode in the series, Communicating with Faculty. This will be largely geared towards students, but we recommend professors listen as well, as we have some suggestions for how to manage unfamiliar methods of communication with students.
Now, before COVID-19 derailed everyone's lives last March, communicating with faculty for students was pretty standard. Go to their office hours, or catch them after class, or in the hall, or send them an email. But now, with COVID confining everyone to their homes, some of those options aren't available anymore. Right now, of those options, really, we only have email still available.
But what if your professor offers a new method of communication, like Zoom office hours or a Slack chat channel? What are the right ways to use these methods of communication while we're all stuck at home? Let's talk about how to use email, as many people don't use it well, and then move on to the newer methods of communication, like video conferencing, chat systems, phone calls, and texts.
Now, when it comes to email, when you need to email your professor, the first thing you need to do is make sure that you can't solve the problem on your own. Emailing the professor without doing your legwork first, at best, that's a short-term solution. And here's something a lot of people don't realize about short-term solutions. They often create long-term problems. So imagine your professor. They're probably teaching anywhere from 2 to 5 classes. If they're lucky, the classes are 20 or 25 students each. But if they're teaching a large lecture class, that number could jump up to 600 students just for one class. So that's anywhere from 40 to 600 possible emails a week if the students don't take responsibility for finding the answer themselves.
If you were the professor in this situation, would you want to answer emails from students who could easily look up the answer in the syllabus, but just don't want to? And wouldn't you note the students who had emailed you about this and remember it later when that student asked for an extension on a paper or some leniency on an exam grade? Of course you would, and so would they. This is a great way to get on the professor's bad side and nothing flat. So don't do it.
Now, here are 3 things you should never email your professor about and how to email your professor when you should. That's what we're going to talk about first. So the first thing you should never email your professor about is if you're asking about something you can find in the syllabus. If your question can be answered by looking in the syllabus, for example, when's the test? Or in the course materials, like what's the definition of this term or the textbook? You shouldn't email your professor about it. If your professor has a course FAQ on their webpage for the course, or if they have a discussion board set up for students to ask questions, go use those as well. The only time you should email your professor a question about something that should be in the syllabus or the course materials or the textbook is when you can't find the answer in those materials after you've looked through them. Don't just say, oh, I looked at the front page of the syllabus and it wasn't there. If it's a 10-page syllabus, you need to look through the whole thing.
Do not ask about your grade. If you have a question about your grade and you've already made sure to read the syllabus completely, make an appointment to see your professor in online office hours and ask about it then. In the United States, a federal law called FERPA forbids professors from using email to talk about grades because email is not considered a secure method of communication, especially if you're using your personal email and not your school-assigned one. Your professor could get in trouble with the federal government if they break this rule, so please don't ask them to. Make an appointment in online office hours and talk to your professor about your grade then.
And finally, don't ask for an exception without a good reason. Professors hate this. There are usually only two good reasons for a professor to give you an exception, an extension, or some other form of help: a family emergency or a medical emergency. Now, right now during COVID, we may not see this as much, but I have had students email me and say, I have a family flight to Hawaii in the middle of the term. Or if you're in Hawaii, a family flight to Disney World in the middle of the term. That's not an emergency and it doesn't qualify for an extension. Do the work and get it done before you go on your trip. Sadly, neither does the death of a pet or the breakdown of your car. They may seem catastrophic, but the thing is, we expect our students to be adults, and being an adult means planning for these kinds of problems. And don't ask your professor to give you an extension because of your own irresponsibility or because you didn't plan well. Your lack of planning is not their problem. And remember what we said earlier about unnecessary emails from 600 students and how annoyed that will make your professor? Don't do that. Sure, we can have sympathy over the death of a pet. We can have sympathy over, oh God, it must be awful to have your car break down in Los Angeles. But that's basically letting us know this thing happened. Don't ask for an extension based on them.
Now, when you can and should email your professor is when you've checked the syllabus, the textbook, the course frequently asked questions, and any other course materials, and you still cannot find an answer. If you've done all that legwork, then please email your professor to ask your question. This includes course topics that are giving you trouble, questions about class procedures, and even issues you might have seen in the course webpage. If you're emailing about a course webpage problem, you may want to take a screenshot to make it easier for your professor and the IT department to track down what the problem is. If you need to clarify a course topic, you might want to mention the page or pages of the textbook that you're looking at. Make it simple for your professor, because that helps them help you. The more information you give us, the better position we're in to help solve your problems.
Now that said, don't give so much information that you bury the question. I used to do that all the time in both undergrad and grad school. I'm still bad at it. I still work on it. But here's a model for this kind of email, and we'll probably put something about this in the show notes. Dear Professor Smith, my name is Jamie Jones, and I am in your Biology 101 course in Section 6. I have read Chapter 2 and the lab handout from Friday afternoon, but I still can't find a definition for the term senescence. When I looked it up in the dictionary, I couldn't figure out how it related to this week's lecture on photosynthesis. Any pointers would be very helpful. Thanks, Jamie Jones.
Notice that each sentence of this email serves an important purpose. Who you are. The first sentence tells your professor who you are and which class you're taking with them. Don't just say your biology 101 class or your biology class, because they probably teach more than one of them. Be specific.
I can't tell you how many times I've had students email me, I'm in your sociology class. Yes, every class I teach is a sociology class. I have no idea which one. You got to tell me. And they say, well, how do you know which one? I'm all, there's a course and a section number. Tell me that at least.
I've had times where I've taught three sections of the same class, and getting, I'm in this class without telling me the section really doesn't tell me anything, especially if they're looking for a clarification on an exam question, for example, because I don't know which of my sections you're in and which exam you got.
The goal here is just to make it easy for us to find you. If I need to look in five different grade books before I finally find your name, I'm going to be annoyed, even if there's nothing to be annoyed about. I mean, that just wasted 5 or 6 minutes of my time hunting down which class you were in. So give us that information up front.
Then, after you let your professor know who you are, there's a problem statement. The second sentence in the email tells your professor what the problem is in a clear statement. Don't dance around the problem, just state it. Next, what you've done so far. The third sentence tells your professor that you've done your due diligence. You've looked in the chapter and the lab handout, and you've gone to the dictionary. And the last part, you politely request assistance. You're asking your professor help.
This also lets your professor know you need an email back. It's not just giving them information. It's also saying, I need some information back from you. Now, you can and should also email your professor if you screwed up and you need to apologize. Now, You should not combine the apology with a request for help. Send two different emails, one with the apology and one with the request for help. Also, save this kind of apology email for bigger mistakes, not the small stuff. Things you would apologize for in an email might include if you disrupted the class, or if you monopolized the professor's time, or some other kind of unprofessional behavior. Things you can probably apologize for during an online meeting in office hours might be misreading the syllabus, or turning something in late, or not at all, or missing class. Those are not things you need to email about. But let's say that you got really upset with someone on a discussion board, because, you know, we're in the discussion boards or what happened in class now, and you got really angry and you called somebody out or you yelled at them in, you know, in writing, you know, you did all caps or whatever, but you were disruptive. Here's a model apology email for that situation. Dear Professor Smith, my name is Jamie Jones and I am in your Biology 101 course, Section 6. I want to apologize for making it hard for other people to contribute to the class discussion on Blackboard. I was upset about the topic and I let my feelings get the best of me. I will make sure that this does not happen again. Respectfully, Jamie Jones.
Again, each sentence of this email serves an important purpose. Who you are again. The professor needs identifying information so they know who you are. Next, the apology statement. The second sentence identifies what you're apologizing for. After that, explanation. The third sentence gives context for what you did and shows why you're aware of why it was a problem. And the last part is commitment. The final sentence commits to not screwing up like this again. We've talked about making new mistakes or making different mistakes. Don't repeat this mistake. If you think about the purpose of an email before you send it, you're going to get much better results. When you email your professor, think of it like a business letter. You need to be polite, but not over formal. You need to provide important information so that they can make a decision or take action.
Now, a quick note. Something you will want to avoid in almost all cases is anything that can be interpreted as a demand or a command. So there are some business phrases that we see a lot in business emails between business people, like your prompt attention is appreciated, or please get back to me at your earliest convenience. These are actually phrases that are only used by bosses to subordinates. Someone working for a boss would not say to their boss, your prompt attention is appreciated, or please get back to me at your earliest convenience. These come across as really, really pushy, and your professor is already probably really allergic to these kinds of phrases. They also come across as really entitled, as if you deserve somehow to be prioritized over their other tasks and their other students. Please don't be that student. It's another great way to annoy the heck out of your professor, whether we're in the COVID-19 period of our lives or not.
And I would be willing to bet that none of you have received emails from professors saying your prompt attention is appreciated, because we're aware of how that can sound. So end it something like sincerely, or I tend to end my emails with best. I want it to be a good working relationship. There are some emails where I don't sign it at all. It's just more of a free-flowing communication. But if you're emailing your professor, just opt to be polite, but not over the top form.
And look back at that model email for asking for help. At the end of it, Jamie Jones says, any pointers would be very helpful. That's fine. Saying, get back to me at your earliest convenience is not.
And finally, don't expect a response to emails that aren't asking for specific information. If you're alerting your professor to a problem with the course website, they may or may not send a thank you. Remember how many students they have to deal with on a daily basis, and you'll understand why you may not get a response back for non-information seeking emails. It's not intentional rudeness. It's just getting overwhelmed and trying to delegate tasks in the day and being able to move forward with everything that has to get done.
Also, remember, they're not just getting emails from students. They're getting emails from their colleagues. They're getting emails from people that they're writing with. They're getting emails from the dean and the chair and about 87 other departments on campus that need to tell them about the latest thing that's going to happen in this area. There's this conference going on, or there's this meeting happening, or whatever. They aren't just juggling those 600 student emails. They're also juggling about an equal number of administrative emails and emails from people that they work with. And so try not to do that unless it's necessary. That's why we're saying most of the emails you send probably aren't necessary.
Now, if you want to talk about Zoom and video conferencing, then you want to set up an appointment with your professor. So I tend to use a Google Doc sheet where my students can give me their availability and let me know what class or what classes they need to talk to me about. And they can let me know whether they want other people available for these meetings or not. So if they want a review session for a test, they're generally good with keeping that open to classmates. Sometimes they need to talk to me individually, and that's also fine. And when they ask for an individual meeting, I'll email the student asking them what they would like to talk about the same way I would as if they were asking to meet with me on campus, because that information helps me prepare to help them the best that I can, rather than me trying to scramble to adapt to new information on the fly.
Now, when it comes to Slack or Discord or other chat channels, if your professor has set up a chat channel like this, be aware that it's not happening in real time, even though it feels like it is. Back when chat first became a thing on the internet, I remember sending a chat message, and when the person wouldn't respond immediately, I got really anxious because I was like, oh God, did I say something that made them mad? No, they probably just weren't at their computer. They'll receive the chat when they come back and turn on Slack or turn on Discord or whatever. So think of a chat message as kind of like leaving a message on someone's answering machine, or leaving a message on voicemail, or sending a text. Not everybody is going to respond to those right away. So it's good to allow the people you're chatting to some lead time to respond back to you. Try not to put urgent things in a chat channel, because the chance is very good they're not going to get seen when you send them, unless your teacher just happens to be checking Slack at that point.
Now, if you want to talk to your professor on the phone, well, if your professor gives this as an option, then respect their available hours. We may not know exactly when everyone is having dinner, but typically calls after 6 or 7 p.m. are a little dicey. And if you've never had the joy of telemarketers calling you around those times asking for money, then I really envy you. But treat phone calls the same you would treat an in-person meeting. Have questions that you need answered or information you're looking for ready. And if possible, give your professor a heads up ahead of the call. Something like, "Hi, Dr. Smith, I have questions about these parts on the study guide that I'd like some clarification about." Or, "Can you explain strain theory from this lecture? It's just not clicking for me." Use the phone if you can't use alternate methods of contacting your professor. So if you can't email, or you don't have the option of getting online because the internet is down, then use a phone call. Or you can also use text messages. Now, I tend to be a little bit more old-fashioned in terms of text, in that I do need words spelled out, because I have an old phone and it doesn't show all emojis, and I am terrible at decoding messages that are what I'm going to call 21st century hieroglyphics. I'm really bad at getting through emoji-laden texts. So be mindful of this when you message your professors. I don't insist on perfect grammar in a text message. I don't use it either. But make sure that the text is easily understandable, and don't assume your professor is a digital native, even if they are.
Yeah, I've run into this not with my students, because I don't yet let them text me back, but my older kid sends me all kinds of acronyms that I can't even find when I look for them on the internet. They've got one that's a W, and then another one, and then a W, and I have no idea what they're supposed to be. I think it's a face, but I have no idea what it's supposed to be. If you're used to communicating with emojis, remember, us older folks especially, we're looking at the emojis and going, we don't know what that is. And acronyms, same problem. All right. I had a friend whose mother, who was in her 60s, sent out a text to the whole family saying, "Grandma just died, LOL. She thought LOL meant lots of love. Okay. And when they told her, she just said laughing out loud to all of the younger people in the family about your mother dying, she couldn't understand it. Okay. We don't understand the acronyms. You've got to spell things out. It doesn't mean you have to write with perfect sentence structure and perfect grammar and capital letters and all that, but at least let us know that this is why I need to call you. Okay, because I need an explanation of strain theory. So you might send, "Hi doc, need explanation of strain theory, can I call? ?" Try very hard not to use abbreviations or text speak, because a lot of us can't understand it, and we may really misunderstand it. Like LOL means laughing out loud, but not to everybody. Now, if your professor has set hours for availability for text messages, just like with the phone, use those times. But if there is an emergency or a problem after hours, text messages are more useful, because we, just like you, tend to be closer to our phones than our emails these days. However, understand that with text messages to a professor, we might not be able to respond immediately. Again, look at this as leaving a message on a voicemail. And be willing to show patience and compassion if they can't reply right away. Just as professors don't know every detail of your life, odds are you don't know everything that they may be going through. I've heard a lot of people saying that for COVID, we may all be experiencing the same storm, but we're not all in the same boat. It's hitting us differently, and that means we're responding differently to the situation. And just like your professor may not know that your mom is sick with COVID, you may not know that his wife just died of it. Now, I don't give students my phone number, but that's largely because I have a hearing difficulty on the phone. People turn into Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, 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 wah. That's really what it sounds like. I do use a text message system to send texts. And this coming semester, I'm considering using them as a semi-chat system, allowing students to respond to things like group texts. I also hold lots of online office hours, and I have a lot of open meeting times so that students have repeat opportunities to see me in real time. And I check and respond to emails nearly every day of the week.
Both in the spring and for the upcoming fall, I had and will continue to have increased availability online. And that means I make myself available by phone and by text. And so far, I've had really positive experiences. My students respected my availability, and I respected their dedication and appreciated hearing from them. Who knew that treating adults as adults would mean that they'll also act like adults? Typically, when you show respect and compassion, you get it back in return. And for professors, open up your lines of communication. Make yourself available via email, virtual meeting, through text messages, through phone calls. Let your students know what days and times you will be available. No one's going to be available 24/7. We all need time to rest and recharge. And be willing to listen to your students. Ask them questions that might seem like small talk, but show compassion. How's your family doing? How's work going? How are you holding up? These go a really long way.
So that's what we have for you in this special episode of Learning Made Easier. Please send this on to other professionals and students who might be facing these same issues. The easiest link to share is probably our Patreon. So that's patreon.com/learningmadeeasier. And if you're able to support us at Patreon right now, we'd really appreciate it.
Please join us next time for our next COVID-19 episode, where we'll talk about reassessing our priorities as professors, students, and institutions in the face of COVID-19.
And we'll see you then. You've been listening to Learning Made Easier, a podcast about how we learn, how we teach, and how they overlap.
We want to say thank you to all of our supporters on Patreon who make this podcast possible.
If you want to support us, please go to www.patreon.com/learningmadeeasier.
We look forward to seeing you next week.